thinks deeper than the rest. Welcome to the War Room with Owen Schroyer.
We're about to be joined here in 5 minutes by FBI whistleblower Steve Friend, and I think he's got some breaking news for us. He can respond to some of the stuff that was breaking earlier today on the Alex Jones Show with Kyle Serafin. And then Kyle, I know, is going to have some other angles. He's going to be joining us this hour as well when Steve departs. So this is all coming up for you next. And again, this is in response to these stories coming out today. Former acting FBI Director Brian Driscoll and other officials pushed out, sources say, FBI firing senior officials at odds with Trump administration. Well, what I kind of want to dig into past the developments today with Steve and Kyle is to try to kind of understand how this happens. In other words, how do you have a situation where the FBI director is unaware of these actors, and it takes a set of circumstances for him to realize what's going on and have them removed? Because it's just a little confusing to me, knowing who Dan Bongino is and knowing who Kash Patel is. It's like, yeah, these guys are not strangers to the concept of the deep state. They're certainly not strangers to the concept of corrupt FBI agents. In fact, Dan Bongino, I know he worked with Kyle Serafin on a film. I don't know if Steve Friend was part of that. But it's like they've literally done documentaries about this. They've written books about this. They've done media tours about this. So you'd think, hey, that's kind of an agenda item. That's kind of an item that you're going to go right in there and say, hey, we got to identify who was running these operations and get rid of them. So again, I don't know. There could be reasons why it didn't happen. There could be reasons like staffing reasons. There could be reasons like other protocol reasons, or maybe Trump is making a bunch of requests, and so they had to table it. And then it's like, okay, well, then is it because Cash found out that this guy was flying him around on the jet? So it's very strange. It's long overdue. It's a good sign. But it's just like, how do we get here? How did it take 6 months in, or I don't know when Patel was officially confirmed in and sworn in, but it's like, what? You knew that these people were in there. You knew they were running January 6 entrapment schemes. You knew that they were running an entrapment scheme in Michigan. You knew that they were running illegitimate operations against President Trump, including the raid on Mar-a-Lago, maybe most importantly, maybe most obviously. So what, you didn't think to go into the files and find out who was running that stuff? But I don't know. That's why I'm saying, well, let's see what the actual FBI agents say. Maybe there's a reason why it took this long. And then what does it mean for the FBI, I think, is another question. But obviously, and you can hear this from Kyle earlier, and I don't know if Steve wants to get into this when he joins us in 90 seconds, but obviously there are still a lot of good people inside of the FBI. Now, I can understand why not everybody wants to be a Steve Friend or a Garrett O'Boyle or a Kyle Serafin. I can understand that. You know, it's certain type of personality that's willing to take that step and put their name out there and their family out there. And so that's a different type of individual versus somebody that's going to say, you know what, I'm going to stay here and I'm going to do my job. But if there's an outlet, if there's a resource where I can get information out there, then I'm going to do my part there. But I need to keep my job, whether it's financial reasons or comfort reasons, or they really love the job. But I'm going to be asking FBI whistleblower Steve Friend on the other side. It's like, okay, how do we get here? Is there a good excuse why it took so long? And should I feel good that now they're going to prioritize this and look into some of these other cases? Because I think crimes were committed when you're targeting individuals like parents that don't like their kids getting porn taught to them in schools, and you're targeting them.
Alex Jones has good genes. In fact, there's only one thing better than Alex's genes. Alex's genes on methylene blue. Just look at those pecs. That charm. The focus. Get your methylene blue now at thealexjonesstore.com and make good genes great again.
For a limited time, you can get this limited edition Murdered Out InfoWars shirt at thealexjonesstore.com with the American flag on the shoulder. It's historic and it funds the operation. We've got other cool shirts that just came in as well. The new Liberty Bell 1776 Declaration of Independence shirt is out. It's limited edition and it's got my signature on the back. That really triggers libtards. And then there's this limited edition. I weaponized the American people. It was actually you weaponized them and we're winning. Get it all now at thealexjonesstore.com. Thanks for your support.
Owen Schroyer is the light. This is the War Room. Watch it live right now at AmericanElection.news.
All right, FBI whistleblower Steve Friend joins us now. Now, Steve, I'm sure you're aware of the conversations that Kyle Serafin and Alex Jones were having earlier on the show, the headlines about the FBI agents that have been walked out in disgrace. By the way, the narrative is kind of unclear here. I'm not seeing anybody saying that they were fired, but pushed out. I don't think that's an insignificant thing. But here to break it all down is FBI whistleblower Steve Friend. Where do you want to start, Steve? Do you want to start with the developments from today, and then maybe kind of work our way through how we got here?
Yeah, that's fine by me. I mean, I think we're all kind of waiting for the official narrative as to what the nature of their exit was, whether or not they were forced to resign or if they were in fact terminated. Maybe in fact the FBI used it, what it did against all the FBI whistleblowers, and that is suspending a security clearance, because that's really the hack around the way that they can remove you from duty and say, look, it's within our purview because the Supreme Court decision said that we're a member of the intelligence community and we're going to question your loyalty to the United States government. So you're an unpaid, indefinitely suspended until further notice sort of status that, you know, myself, Kyle, Garrett O'Boyle currently sits in now around 1,050 days.
Well, I would ask the question of, is that like a strategic thing to maybe stop them from talking or going into whistleblower status? But you guys obviously are not, you're not shy to speak to the media. So I guess that logic doesn't really play out. So what would the strategy be then for them to kind of put them in a situation like you guys have been in, like a holding pattern, instead of just outright firing them?
Well, I think that the strategy that the FBI used for the whistleblowers was a workaround for retaliation laws. So the law is very clear. If you bring forward a reasonable concern of waste, fraud, abuse, risk to the public safety, violation, rule, policy, procedure, you are entitled to certain protections under the law. They can't retaliate against you. But the FBI has become very proficient at retaliating against you, but not doing it officially. And they used the security clearance to do that. I'm just sort of proffering that as potentially the reason that, or the justification that they used to remove them from duty. But if you press me for it, if you had a gun to my head, I would probably go with they removed them via a termination. They found something like they lacked candor, there was some sort of insubordination here. From what I'm understanding about Brian Driscoll, there's adequate and a very sufficient amount of evidence here about him being insubordinate, and that goes back to him being the acting director before Kash Patel took the helm. So you know, there is a gap in time. He was actually promoted after that. So you know, to justify that would be difficult. But you know, when he was the acting director of the FBI, he refused to cooperate with the Attorney General of the United States. There was a directive for him to provide a list of employees who were involved with the January 6th investigations, and he refused to do that. And now today, from what I'm learning, because Brian Driscoll is currently in charge of CIRG, which means the Critical Incident Response Group, has oversight of the pilot program. So the pilots who fly around the Gulfstream 550 are underneath his jurisdiction. And I believe he was given a directive to fire the pilot who's been flying Kash Patel around, who was the case agent on the Mar-a-Lago classified documents raid. So he apparently refused to do that. Again, was insubordinate. And now that we have a new sheriff in town with Kash Patel there, and he was a little bit embarrassed by the fact that the guy who's been flying him around for the last 6 or 7 months was a member or actually had oversight of the worst example of weaponization that we've seen in the last few years from the FBI, where we sent armed agents to the former president's house and they rooted around his wife's underwear drawer. That guy was privileged enough to fly the director around and most recently to New Zealand last week, half a world away. That made the FBI director rather upset. So he gave that directive and Brian Driscoll didn't follow through. So now the chopping block, his name is up there.
Well, and I look at the situation from 2 weeks ago where they finally dumped Maureen Comey. And I mean, I won't get into the you know thoughts I have on that, but it was like, okay, they just fired her. They just said, okay, you're done. It wasn't like there was an incident that they pointed to. They just said, no, you're fired here. So it's not like they can't just fire people. I mean, they can fire you if they want. So it is kind of a strange thing that we're kind of in like this no man's land trying to figure out exactly what went on. There's no doubt though for Driscoll, yeah, insubordination would be an easy excuse if you needed one. He kind of became an activist even. He was like an activist to the left. It wasn't like something where he was doing whistleblower stuff with problems with the FBI. He kind of just came out as like, no, I'm really anti-Trump. Maybe subtly, but yeah, that was kind of the message I think he was trying to perceive. But then the issue with Jensen is, you know, he's all over the January 6th stuff. And Giardina as well. So, you know, this is where I kind of wonder, and I want to get your expertise on process here. I'm just saying, if I'm Kash Patel, these are things that are already on my radar, right? These are things that I'm kind of going into the administration thinking about. I'm thinking about the wrongs during January 6th. I'm thinking about the wrongs done to President Donald Trump. It's not like they're unfamiliar with these events. They've talked about them for years. I'm thinking, if you become the new FBI director, that's something right on your radar. I mean, that's something you're digging right into and saying, who's doing this stuff? Did that not happen? And if not, why would that be?
It did not happen. I think the most benign, innocent explanation that you could give for both Cash and Dan Bongino going in was that it was a philosophical decision they made that they were going to go in and win hearts and minds rather than use shock and awe. And the mandate that we all had and that I was very optimistic about seeing was shock and awe. We're going to remove the problematic personnel. And if you happen to remove the wrong person, this is not like a kinetic action overseas where there's collateral damage. Collateral damage personnel-wise, you just bring that person back. But instead, they went in with the false presupposition that they were going to restore the default settings within the FBI, that they bought into the narrative that you see on the Fox News of the world, that there's lots of good men and women of the FBI, and they just needed to have rigorous obedience to the Constitution be the prime directive once more, and we would return to a time where the FBI represented fidelity, bravery, and integrity. But that's just not true. I mean, other than guys like Kyle Serafin, Garrett O'Boyle, Marcus Allen, Phil Kennedy, and others who are not known as well around media, social media, the guys who brought forward reasonable concerns blew the whistle because we actually followed our training and our directive as agents. We said, hey, look, if we are off the rails here, it is incumbent on you as either an agent or even employee of the agency to throw the flag and say, no, Police Battalion 101 actually happened in history. It's never acceptable to just follow orders with things that are unethical, illegal, immoral, or unconstitutional. But most FBI agents didn't do that. They stuck their heads down, just followed orders. And then when Cash and Dan arrived, the one thing that the people are really proficient at the Hoover Building is bubble wrapping management and leadership. And that's exactly what they did. They distracted them. They said, tapped you on the shoulder, let me show you the secret James Comey room so you won't really be in there doing the actual change that we want you to do.
Oh, like the burn bags that were just totally just a buzzword narrative.
The burn bags, Kash Patel was rooting around like a raccoon going through the garbage because the FBI, I guess, uses typewriters again all of a sudden. It's not like it's all saved on a classified server at his fingertips whenever because he wants to pretend that he's living in a spy novel. Well, they went in there, they got distracted, and I don't even think they looked at the org chart. If you're the director of the FBI, you are 14 levels above the beat agent, the brick agent who's working a case. And because they're stressed out and the people there have convince them that if they're not briefed up on the highest priority cases every single day and knowing the intimate details of those cases, then New York or Washington, D.C. could be exploded because of a terrorism attack. That's just not reasonable. The FBI director and particularly the deputy director are in charge of sort of moving the chess pieces around the board, setting a vision, reorienting the strategy, and reprioritizing what the agency is actually supposed to do. You don't have to be briefed up on the intimate details of every little case You have to actually trust, if you do believe that there's good men and women of the FBI, you have to trust the experience and the training of those people to do those cases. But because they're distracted, they're not actually bringing about the change, which is why we're not seeing a change in the intelligence collection processes that are going on in the FBI. They're actually bragging about that, beefing that up. We haven't seen a removal of what's been my cause, and that is integrated program management, IPM, which is a code word, government speak, for a quota system. Because the FBI has a quota system and it requires agents to arrest a certain number of people, use specific tools, author certain intelligence products every single year. And if you do that, then the funding flows from Congress because they can go back and say, look at all the terrorists that we stopped, even though we entrapped all these people, and give us billions of more dollars. And senior executives in every single field office are getting financial bonuses because their subordinates are arresting the right number of people. They're not... This isn't widget making. It's not a factory. This is law enforcement. Your goal, theoretically, is to bring crime down. If you achieve the mission and you eradicate crime, you kind of work yourself out of a job. But that's not what a bureaucracy is. A bureaucracy is interested in growing. You want to get more capabilities, more goodies, more personnel, more funding. So they work smarter, not harder. They redefine what it is to be a terrorist so that they can go after people. And it goes from real terrorists to homegrown violent extremists, domestic violent extremists, militia violent extremists, racially motivated violent extremists. Mom at school board meeting is an anti-government, anti-authority.
Oh, yeah, anti-vaxxer. It's like, whoa. And you know, I giggled when you said that because Patel and Bongino, I believe both of them have said essentially the FBI needs to be either completely revamped or even shut down. I think Patel said just shut it down even. So it's funny that you say, oh, no, actually, it's all about making it bigger. It's like, I wonder if they've changed their minds on that. Well, it sounds to me like there's no way Patel didn't know who was flying his jet. I mean, I don't know. I guess there's plausible deniability. He didn't know who was flying him around. But it seems like if you're a competent FBI director, you got to know who's flying your plane. I mean, it's literally your life, right? I mean... Do you think he didn't know? Do you think he just didn't think much of it? I mean, how do you even end up in... Because I look at this development and I say, does Driscoll even get fired if Serafin doesn't post that X post a couple days ago? Does this even happen?
No, there's no way. There's no way. I mean, from what I understand, Cash Patel might be hate listening to Kyle Serafin's podcast on a daily basis to find out what sort of personnel changes need to be made. I mean, I guess you could wait 6 to 8 months to see what's going to happen, or you could just listen to Kyle because he's so tapped in to what's going on there. That was a huge black eye. But look, in Cash Patel's defense, he might not have read the resume of the guy who's flying the plane, might have presumed that this is probably a competent person and isn't really doing anything other than flying planes. But I think they made the same mistake with Stephen Jensen. They came in and said, look, they heard from the people on the inside of the Hoover building. Here's a guy. He's a company guy, been around almost 20 years, has a background in national security. And they said, OK, let's promote him. They didn't know that he was the J6 warlord who architected the FBI response to the entire J6 event and the way that they went after people in such a weaponized fashion. The problem then was, instead of course correcting and saying, oh, they slipped one past, that would then be tantamount to an admission that they didn't have control of the people within their sphere in the Hoover building. So they leaned into that really hard and they poked and prodded their people on social media to go out and say, oh, no, actually, he knows where the bodies are buried. This is a genius move. This is a four-dimensional underwater chess and they're going to get everything for us. No, that didn't happen. And then, in fact, Cash Patel even said on cable news that Steve Jensen, he raised concerns, but at the end of the day, there's a chain of command and he just followed orders. And that's what the American people should expect. That's not what I did. That's not what Kyle did. That's not what any of the whistleblowers did, because we actually recognize what, in fact, is our job. And that is to protect the American people against fraud and force. And that includes when the agency itself becomes an enemy of the people. You have to throw that flag. And I don't think enough people came forward. And the only thing that Cash Patel and Dan Bongino do definitively know upon arriving is that everyone within their sphere failed to do that. And that's a problem.
I'm trying to wrap my head around this, not to make excuses for them, but you know, I mean, I guess you could call it that. Could demoralization be an issue? I mean, maybe they get in there and they have all these high hopes. It's like, I don't know, maybe you're a baseball player or something, you get signed to a new team in the offseason and you got these high hopes and then you get there and you realize, oh my, this team sucks. And you're just demoralized. You get over it. You're not talking about winning championships anymore. Could it be something like that? Like, you know, Cash gets in there, he's all hyped. And then he gets in there and it's like, oh my gosh, this is the FBI. This thing is a mess. Demoralization happens and he kind of just gives up.
I mean, that's certainly something you could speculate on, but I think that they don't know the actual power that they have at their fingertips as the FBI director and the deputy director. There should never be a time where the FBI director says, this is a problematic person, this person was engaging in activities that were outside of policy, potentially unconstitutional, illegal, they should be removed from duty. And then the human resources gal comes to the room and says, no, you can't do that. A legitimate leader, somebody who's an energetic executive, will come in and say, no, that gets done by the close of business today. And if it doesn't, then you're out of a job, next man up. That was the expectation that I had going. And we gave Kash Patel a list of people who were problematic, and a lot of them were actually promoted until recently. And now maybe this could be a good sign. Maybe we're going to course correct. I wish it hadn't happened in August. I wish they had snapped their fingers and done a single pen stroke and put my buddy Garrett O'Boyle back on the payroll, at least, like Brian Auten, the intelligence analyst who was part of the Russian collusion hoax, who still sits on paid suspension. Garrett, though, almost 3 years now, four small children. Can't
Let me ask you this personally.
Since 2022.
Okay, put your FBI analysis hat down. Put the FBI whistleblower status down for a second. Let me ask you just as a person. I know the suspendables were essentially promised that there would be some form of redemption here, okay? Specifically, that if you wanted your jobs back, you could have them. Didn't happen. What goes through your mind? How do you deal with that?
It's harder to deal with because 3 years ago, at least they had the decency to stab me in the chest. But now, having been part of essentially the ascendancy of Kash Patel, Dan Bongino, and you can even argue that Donald Trump owes a significant portion of his ascendancy back to the presidency to the information that FBI whistleblowers brought forward because of the weaponization that galvanized the appetite for the American people to vote overwhelmingly for his election in 2024. And then to be told that, well, you might have a position here, and then that doesn't happen. I mean, I'm not endeavoring to do that. I didn't do it for selfish reasons. But then to find out that not only has it not happened, they haven't had a bookend for us where we've had a reinstatement of our security clearance or back pay or anything like that. But beyond that, that the FBI director and deputy director are going to members of Congress and saying that my friends and I have character issues, actually going diametrically opposed and not saying, we're not just going to not bring you back to where you were, but we're going to continue to press down on the pedal here and message that you're a problem person that's going to prohibit you from having any sort of future prospects. Oh, and I got rejected recently for an overnight security guard position that was hourly and required a GED and the ability to stand because I didn't meet the standards. Now, I can't help but think that there's a little bit of influence coming from my ex-girlfriend over the FBI with that. And that's not a one-off. I mean, I got rejected to work at a car wash, at a gas station, at a loading dock for a big box store, and I had a reference for that. The sacrifice that I made, that my family made, we did that because it was the right thing to do, but we shouldn't have to pay for that for the rest of our lives. There needs to be a bookend here. There needs to be a redemption aspect to this story so that we can move on. If they don't want us, it's their carnival now. They can run things. I'm happy to be a resource. I'm happy to make recommendations, bring information forward to them if they want it. I never expected to have a paycheck back from them, but I shouldn't have to pay for that for the remainder of my time on Earth.
Well, I'm curious how they're handling it now, and I kind of use this as a reference point. Obviously, I've never worked in the federal government, specifically at the FBI like you have, but you know, I've seen instances in media where people will change teams or get a new job, and they'll say, oh, no doubt, I'll bring you in, I'll hire you as my team member, and then somebody says, you can't do that, and then they basically just never talk again. It's like, well, what the hell? One example I'll never forget. You know, Laura Ingraham and Michael Savage were always good friends. Michael Savage famously has been blacklisted from Fox News. When Laura Ingraham got her job, she promised Michael on his show. She said, I promise I will get you on the show. She never did, and they don't talk anymore. And so I'm just wondering, is it like a similar thing? Like Bongino, Patel, do they just ghost you? Do they just like to pretend you don't exist?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, frankly, yes. I don't want to put people's names on anything, but let's just say that I was promised specific positions on staff for high-level people within the FBI. I was called personally and then was never contacted again after I agreed to do that. So, yeah, again, I'm happy to be a resource. I really, my greatest optimism was about reforming the agency to take the teeth out of this attack dog and restore it to some semblance of an objective force for good. I can do that from the inside. I can do that from the outside. But if it is, in fact, a position on the outside, I have to also be able to go and earn an income for my family and I. And for whatever the reason is, they've made the decision to send the message that that can't happen, because if you step outside and you embarrass the FBI in any way, then the message has to come across that you are destroyed, because they do not want anyone else to come forward ever again, even if it is for the right reasons, even if it is reasonable, even if it is, in my situation, information that has been 100% vindicated. Tulsi Gabbard declassified documents about 5 or 6 weeks ago that said that I was 100% correct on this one. All I wanted was that matter taken up and adjudicated, and I would have gone back to work. But that didn't happen. Instead, you bring that concern forward. Oh, we're embarrassed now, Steve. So now you have to pay the price, because they come and they go, Hobbs, but the institution is forever. The institution over the Constitution when it comes to this out-of-control weaponized agency. And regardless of who was in charge, if it's James Comey, Christopher Wray, or apparently Kash Patel, we get the exact same problems.
It just, to me, it doesn't make any logical sense, unless I'm going to start reaching really bad conclusions here. It doesn't make any logical sense, because, again, Dan Bongino had one of the biggest podcasts going, critical of the FBI regularly, extremely critical. Patel going around doing media tours, huge podcast, huge TV shows, major critic of the FBI. And now you're sitting here and you're saying, wait a second, I'm still getting blackballed, I'm still getting blacklisted because I'm a critic of the FBI, when the two guys that are at the top of the FBI have been just as critical as me. That's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, you got to start to have deductive reasoning and try to reach logical conclusions here. And I don't like the conclusions I'm reaching.
And my perspective is, you know, I love my friends. If my friends are doing something that's bad for them, that's negative, I want to tell them when they're doing that. And even if it makes them mad and they don't want to be my friend anymore, as long as they take the corrective action, then I can live with that. And that's sort of my perspective. Now, I'm being on the outside. I'm rooting for Kash Patel and Dan Bongino. They might get a bad feelings when I say this. Apparently, they're telling that to members of Congress, that I'm undermining their authority by criticizing them. And I'm hardly snarky or trolling. I'm pretty academic with my criticisms. I say, like, you guys are, as an agency, taking credit for things you didn't do. It's hurting your ability to liaise with local and state partners when a traffic officer pulls a vehicle over and pulls a kilo of cocaine out, and then you put a press release out and says that, wow, the FBI interdicted a massive drug trafficking operation. No, you didn't. You took credit for things you didn't do, and you shouldn't do that. And I've told Kash Patel that. So when I say that, I'm sharing that information. That's me calling out and saying, because I can't have a direct conversation with them anymore. They've severed all ties, severed all lines of communication. That's me saying, this is the corrective action that I would be recommending if I was sitting at your side. And I don't have to sit at your side to do that. You don't have to bring me in. I want you to succeed. I want you to reform this agency, because to me, and I know I'm siloed in this, to me, an out-of-control weaponized FBI is the greatest threat to this country being a going concern going forward. We cannot have a Stasi, a KGB, or a Cheka that is capable of intelligence collection and the ability to take away your freedom and potentially your life, and can expect to operate as a land that is free. We're allegedly free at this point. But well, as it's borne out, and particularly in the last presidential administration, when the mask fully came off, and we saw a weaponized agency, and we got to the bottom of the slippery slope that all the Ron Paulites and libertarians
were screaming
about.
Steve, hold that thought right there. We're up against a break. And I would just say, while we close this out, ironically enough, you kind of seem to have more of an impact from the outside, but they still need to do right by you. They still need to restore your good character and your good standing, whether you want another job or not. I don't know, but that needs to happen. There's a reason why supplements are so big and so popular and have such a great result. It's because whether it's your diet, whether it's your exercise routine, the point is you're lacking in some very important vitamins, very important minerals that can make you healthier, live longer, and feel better.
We're also under constant attack, Owen, and that's what's very important. So the modern human living experience, the environment that we subject ourselves to, it's the equivalent of smoking like a couple packs of cigarettes every single day. Like, that's the bad food that we eat, that's the poison in the water, XYZ.
So it's kind of like what happens is, Rex Jones in studio with me, we're about to make a very exciting new product announcement here. So what ends up happening is, whether it's the modern day diet or whether it's the modern day atmosphere or whether it's, you know, a sedative state, you're not getting whatever it is you need to make your body function at its highest capabilities.
Absolutely correct. And that's why we created these two new formulas that are now live at thealexjonesstore.com. So we've got Methyl Drive here, and we've also got Power Plant. Now, both of them, at their core, they do around the same type of thing. It's increasing fuel for you to create new mitochondria. It's increasing mitochondrial efficiency. It's reducing oxidative stress and XYZ, other things like that. Now, I want to single out Power Plant really quick. If you're a guy and you're looking for a boost, a healthy, sustainable testosterone boost, we made Power Plant specifically for someone that wants to increase their free testosterone.
I remember when I was looking into supplements and stuff and different things, like, you know, people don't get enough boron. They don't even know what boron is. And I remember one thing that always stuck in my head, and that's, you know, it's just true. Well, what does boron kind of rhyme with, folks? I'll just leave it at that. You know what I mean?
We've got bits and pieces of a system here that comes together and provides you just the antioxidant support you need, the testosterone support you need, the mitochondrial health support you need. It's all there. It's all together. It's in both of these products. You could take both of these at the same time and experience a heck of a lot of benefits. Now, I would say younger, older. You're an older person. You need more overall body support. You need the overall antioxidant support. I would go with the Methyl Drive. But if you're a younger person or someone looking for a performance boost, I would go with the Power Plant.
I can enhance what I'm doing here maybe like tenfold with the right supplement routine.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that statement. Look, the reason why this is called Power Plant is because it has cordyceps in it. Now, of course, the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell and all of that, but cordyceps is like an elite top tier S tier ingredient, which increases the amount of ATP you make, which indirectly helps you make more mitochondria, but beyond that, increases your oxygen carrying capacity. So you want to talk about workouts, you want to talk about power, you talk about strength, talk about Power Plant.
And that's what you need, especially when you're doing a heavy lift and you need to have good breathing, or you're doing long form cardio and you need to have strong breathing. That's where this is going to come into play. And when you started to talk about the new product that we just came out with the PQQ and the CoQ10.
Yes, the Methyl Drive.
Folks, I'm telling you, it's like, if I had to do a list of like, okay, if someone said you can pick five things that you're going to get in a supplement, like what are the most important things? Guarantee you, you ask me 100 times, PQQ and CoQ10 are on that list for me 100 times.
Vitamin B12, as-methylcobalamin, the good kind. Magnesium, coenzyme Q10, CoQ10, PQQ. Black pepper for absorption. You can't ask for a better catch-all, really. And the synergy that both of these products have with the methylene blue is unparalleled. You will not find a better product on the market that's targeted in that specific way, because we made these for you, the customer, and for ourselves, because we believe in the product. We take the product.
TheAlexJonesStore.com to get these new products. Try them for yourself. I know they're going to become a staple. I see Rex working out here every once in a while. We've worked out in the gym every once in a while. And, you know, he's really excited about this stuff. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Piercing through the globalist agenda, welcome Owen Schroyer.
All right, I wanted to hold FBI whistleblower Steve Friend over so we could finish his shot. We're also now joined by Kyle Serafin. So we got two FBI whistleblowers on here, and it'll maybe even be nice for them to kind of just bounce off of one another. And I can just sit here like a mannequin, kind of directing the conversation with some talking points. But Steve, you had a thought you were trying to express before we were cut off by the break. If you want to try to finish that now,
I mean, I think the finishing thought is that we are on the outside or on the inside. It doesn't really matter to me. I think that the out of control weaponized FBI presents the greatest challenge to the country to remain a country going forward. And this has been the cause of myself, of Kyle, and all the other whistleblowers that we've been harping on this now for nigh on 3 years. And the fact that we were so optimistic was because we thought it was falling on the guys that were going in there. We thought that they took that seriously. And I think that that's just been a devastating realization to come to, that perhaps, in fact, now that they've been installed, They've been successfully co-opted, bubble-wrapped, whatever term you prefer, and we're not going to see those changes that are absolutely necessary. I'm not even speaking about my own personal situation. I'm concerned for my kids. I'm concerned for the future. And if the FBI continues to operate as it is, as it continues to be an intelligence agency with a gun, then that doesn't bode well for us as a country going forward.
And I'll inject this, and then I'll bring Kyle in, and he can either respond to this or get to the kind of the news from today with some alternative angles. And we were texting before the show too, if he wants to get into some of that. But I agree with that, and I expand on that. And this is why at times I get frustrated with the Trump administration. And so Alex Jones comes busting in here. If we don't get the deep state arrest from this administration, then I don't know what happens. If we don't maintain the House in the midterms, then I don't know what happens. I don't know. Now, I could sit here and say the less Trump delivers, then the more hardcore the next Republican candidate is going to have to be. The more hardcore the next Republican president is going to have to be. And I do believe that will be the case. But there's no guarantees of that. There's no guarantees that another hardcore Republican could even win. Especially depending on what happens in the midterm. So I can't bet on that because it's not an assured thing. I know Trump is in there now. I know the FBI director and deputy director apparently used to want to do stuff to the deep state. Trump used to want to do stuff to the deep state. And I'm just sitting here saying, you know, I'm like John Travolta in Pulp Fiction. Like, what's going on? So Kyle, I don't know if you want to respond to that or get into the big news from today.
No, let's respond to that. I agree with you. I think Donald Trump basically represents a speed bump at this point. He is a slowdown on the agenda of that was going on, but he's not a reversal. He's not a U-turn, not in any meaningful way. So Steve Friend and I have actually had this conversation privately, and I think we've shared it in some forums. This was a very transactional vote. I wanted you to be pardoned. I wanted my friend Steve Baker to be pardoned and not have to serve a sentence because he was a journalist on January 6th and you were standing outside. I didn't want that on your record for the rest of your life. Like, that was kind of what I wanted out of this presidency. So I got that on day one. So I'm being greedy at this point going forward. If I'm being totally honest, I'm very greedy about it. I want all the stuff. I want the reversal. I want the U-turn. I don't want a speed bump and someone just hitting the brakes. But we haven't gotten all the things we wanted. And then I also kind of would like it if this guy de-weaponized this agency that came after my family, that investigated me criminally, simply because I pointed out the things that are obviously wrong. Like, you shouldn't be holding people's First Amendment hostage and using it to go against them. You shouldn't be going out there and saying the Christian faith is enough for us to come and get you. And if you have Christian beliefs that say that you think that a vaccine that was developed with some sort of fetal cell line is antithetical to your belief, then you're persona non grata and we're going to come after you. We're going to actually investigate you and we're going to try to align you with the domestic terrorist force. I'm finding out, behind the scenes that the FBI's discussions about COVID vaccines, which is where this all ends up going back to for both Steve and for me and for Gerda Boyle and for all the guys that I know that were involved in this, it was an initial resistance to something where they said, you must do this. And we were like, why the hell are you guys so interested in us doing this? Like, you know, this a normal religious accommodation process would have been no big deal. There were a small number of people that said they didn't want to. I'd already had the disease. I got it in 2020. So like I was fine. I didn't need it. I didn't need a shot in 2020, 21. And they were so driving that it made every single fiber in my being go like, what is going on here? I've got more questions. And the discussions that the FBI executives, including some of the people like Steve Jensen, who was apparently removed today, these people were vehemently opposed to us existing inside the Bureau and tried to align people who said no to a vaccine because of religious reasons with domestic terrorism, which, by the way, wasn't domestic terrorism. It was just what they called people who peacefully protested outside of the Capitol on January 6th. And yes, there was a riot. And yes, there were shenanigans that went on. But let's be real. I was an FBI agent in Washington, D.C. from 2016 until 2021. I saw what happened during the summer of 2020. I was there when they had the kneel team Sixers like drop a knee and show solidarity with BLM, even though there was no obvious threat to them. And I saw people put Secret Service people in the hospital, like our Secret Service uniform agents and the protective detail that was outside the White House. They put President Trump in the freaking bunker because they were trying to raid the White House. And they had to put up anti-scale fencing and like a bunch of people were hospitalized over this. And my team was called out of a covert surveillance role to stand there with body armor on and rifles and try to make sure that no Antifa people raided the North Lawn of the White House. So I know what it looked like. And I know that January 6th was a much shorter version of that. And I know what the prosecutions looked like on both sides. One got nothing. No investigation, no national push, no significant efforts to identify every single person wearing a mask. And the other one was able to identify MAGA grandmas, even though they still can't find the pipe bomber. If we remember, the guys that are in charge right now, did they promise some things like they were going to find the pipe bomber? They're going to find out who had the cocaine in the White House. Steve always points out that they were going to go after the Dobbs leaker, even though that's not a crime, but they were going to find that person anyway for some reason. Like, there's a lot of priorities that our FBI has been saying. They were going to do stuff about releasing the Epstein files and give us the truth. And then they immediately just went like, nah, never mind. We're just going to do a really, really bad PR job. And they're finally, after 8 months, they're essentially doing the stuff that I told them they should have been doing on January 20th, because this was what my social media said. I just got a text message between the time that you asked me to come on here and being on Alex Jones' show and like right now. And it was from somebody inside the Hoover building that said, Kyle Serafin might as well be the FBI director because his Twitter account is dictating the policies and the direction that the FBI is doing.
Well, that's what I said.
How dumb is that?
But
it's so dumb.
That's what I said to Steve earlier. I said, this Driscoll and Jensen... And Giordana would have never probably even been fired or you know, asked to leave or whatever the case is. Maybe we'll find out soon. I don't know if you know the exact nature of that. That likely doesn't even happen if it wasn't for your post. Now let me just hit pause and kind of again explain where I'm at here, because you guys are obviously you're doing what you're convicted to do. Okay. And from my point of view, you're doing the right thing. But I sit here and I say, okay, here's it's actually three agents, but there's O'Boyle and there's other suspendables too. But here's three agents, Driscoll, Jensen, and Giordina, that have been collecting paychecks for the last 4 years, that have not had their characters assassinated, that have not been targeted because of becoming a whistleblower like you guys have. And so, hey, maybe you want to go back to the FBI, maybe you don't. But And maybe Cash Patel and Dan Bongino have a, you know, I don't know if their desk is as much of a problem as Pam Bondi's desk is, but, you know, okay, they've got a lot of other stuff that they got to do. You can knock this out in a couple hours. You can right the wrongs that have been done to you guys in just a couple hours with a simple phone call of what can we do for you, and then do it. You could do it in a couple hours, and it hasn't been done. So I'm just sitting here saying, why? Why would that not be done? And then why would it take this long to get rid of these corrupt FBI agents, which probably would not have even happened if it wasn't for your post the other day? I'll let Steve respond to that first.
I think it goes back to the bubble wrapping that went on originally when those guys ascended to the positions that they hold right now, where they went in and they had the false assumption that the people that were going to be there were actually going to be good actors, good faith actors, and saying, oh, you know, I'm so glad you're here. Let me go show you the James Comey room. Those same people were saying to them, hey, we can't make that happen for one reason or another. Apparently in meetings with Senate representatives, when they're coming to discussions about what's going to happen with these whistleblowers who have been so wrongly treated by the FBI by a past administration, the conversations were had where they were basically mouthing talking points from their underlings, saying that there were all these other problems involving Garrett O'Boyle, Kyle Serafin, myself. And that's just not true. I mean, our lawyers have access to our full personnel file. So we know what is in there, what they assume to be derogatory, and that the information that was being shared with senators to justify not doing any sort of reinstatement or back pay or giving a security clearance back, those were just completely artificial and invented out of whole cloth. So I think there's a lot of bad faith actors that are there. They're providing them that information. And then I think it also goes back to we're now in charge. We're paranoid, petrified at the prospect of a leak. And they sort of falsely connect whistleblowing with leaking, apparently. And I can see how they made that logical jump, because guys like Kyle are out there sharing this information and they might think it's a leak, but it is in fact a reasonable concern of waste, fraud, and abuse. And they want to dissuade anyone from coming forward ever again. And there's no better example than leaving a Garrett O'Boyle out there on the longest limb and saying that he has character issues and he can't ever earn an income for the rest of his life.
You know, that's funny, a character issue. Yeah, I guess at the FBI, having good character, I guess you can't do that, right? I guess that's the message, is if you have good character, you can't work at the FBI. I mean, I don't know how to interpret that otherwise. Now, Kyle, I would, I'd probably make a pretty sufficient bet that you have Dan Bongino's personal number in your phone right now. And so I would ask it to you like this. If Dan Bongino just picked up the phone and just called you and said, Kyle, what not even about other stuff, not even about FBI issues or any of the other stuff that we can talk about here. I mean, just if he just picked up the phone and said, Kyle, what can we do to make this right?
Nothing stopping them. Pride is probably the thing that stops people from doing that. Actually, I had a funny conversation. I got into a back and forth with James O'Keefe, who I don't have a lot of love for. Just pulled me in front of a deposition last week and wasted one of my, like, a full day, 8 hours asking questions about my Twitter account. And because I was mean to James O'Keefe, who I think is a bad person, I think he's a bad actor, and I'm happy to, you know, people can deal with that on another level. Dan Bongino sent me a message and said, we just need to come together. This was like from like August of last year or maybe April of last year. We need to come together. I go, well, what does that look like, Dan? Because he texted me that.
Wait,
you know?
Just to clarify, that's when you were originally having your kind of spat with James O'Keefe is what you're talking about.
Yeah, and here's the deal. I had a video come to into my possession from one of his team members where he basically got an underage girl. She was 20 years old. She was in a bar. He got her hammered, and then they were like fondling her, him and his buddy. And I thought that was atrocious. Like, I'm the father of daughters. Like, I don't want that. That's not a morally upright thing to do. And they thought it was okay because it was a Chuck Schumer aide who was like an intern. All of that's disgusting. So like that kind of behavior, that I don't want that anywhere in America. Like, that's just, I will defend young women, even ones who make bad decisions at 20 years old, from a 40-year-old guy that's going to go out there and use his money and power. So that was the nature of the qualm and the spat that we had. And then Dan hits me up and just says, hey, we need to come together as a movement. And I go, well, what does that look like? And he's like, we just need to come together. And I'm like, okay, fine. Like, that's not a plan. So that was the end of that conversation. And then he just ghosted me during the longer problem, which happened, I think, in August of last year, where essentially, and this is the real crux of the issue, why he and I don't speak. Julie Kelly released a quote unquote bombshell story that the raid on Mar-a-Lago, very interesting, because the guy who was the former acting director of the FBI, Brian Driscoll, who was removed apparently today or effective tomorrow. He was the one who led HRT at that time. He was the commander of HRT. So all this kind of plays back in. Julie Kelly dropped the quote unquote bombshell that there was a deadly force authorized during the raid of Mar-a-Lago. And the problem with that is that deadly force is authorized always when you're an FBI agent, if people meet the parameters where deadly force is authorized. It's a standing policy from the minute you get your gun. It doesn't matter if you're sitting on the toilet in a public restroom, or you're sitting in the pews at church, or if you're on duty at work, or if you're driving home in traffic, or you're changing the diaper. Like, you always have deadly force available to you if you meet the parameters of deadly force under the DOJ's deadly force policy. And it's required by policy to be put in writing for every single search warrant that's served. It's just a good time to be able to refresh everybody's memory when that is. And so that's what I said. I was like, this is not a bombshell. Every search warrant happens. The minute you choose search warrant is the tool I'm going to use, then deadly force is on the table. That's why I recommended and thought it was the right thing. And I said it to Dan Bongino in September of 2022. We should have had a consent-based search if Donald Trump was going to do anything. If they were going to search Mar-a-Lago, you asked for consent. They likely would have given it at some point in time. They can negotiate that with the lawyers. That's not what happened. They sent in a tactical team. All of that's terrible. Julie Kelly got everybody all spun up. Oh, deadly force was authorized. Well, there was a bunch of things she said that were false, including the fact that it would have like potentially killed Donald Trump. They waited till he was out of town. There was no Secret Service detail there in the same way. And here's the craziest thing. I know for a fact that Dan Bongino knew that Mar-a-Lago is different when Donald Trump is not there, because he and I both attended the premiere of the movie that we helped make at Mar-a-Lago when Donald Trump wasn't there and nobody touched me. I could have walked in there with a concealed handgun. Well,
correct me if I'm wrong on this one, too. I mean, they knew they were coming. It wasn't like it was a shock and awe thing. They knew they were coming.
No, it was stated in the engagement. So it actually stated in their things that they had what they called engagement with the Secret Service. She acted like that was a tactical engagement, when in reality it was like phone calls and coordination. We're coming by. Here's where it is. So she misconstrued that. Here's the reason why that was really scary, Owen. Let me tell you why it was dangerous. The reason why that was dangerous, if you remember August of 2024, a lot of uncertainties existed. Biden was getting tossed out. We didn't know, you know, that Trump was going to win like we know today. So it was like, oh God, are we going to deal with 4 more years of Biden, Harris, whatever that looks like? And so people were getting really panicky. A lot of people in the MAGA movement were also very panicky. And when you start telling MAGA people, the FBI tried to kill the guy that you want to be as the president, this is post-Butler. This is just after they'd already had the incident outside the golf course at Mar-a-Lago or whatever it was in Florida. So now you've had 2 assassination attempts, and now she's claiming that the FBI was also in on it. To say that meant, in my mind, that somebody was likely to snap. And I get as many crazy DMs as you probably do, where like lunatic people think they know the secret truth and they were going to go out there and do the righteous thing. Right? So imagine some crazy MAGA person who like has latched onto an ideology, now believes that the FBI tried to kill him. And then guess what? Right after that, some dude went and attacked the FBI's office, I think in Ohio, and was firing a nail gun while carrying an AR-15 at the office. And they almost killed him. Or maybe they did kill him, Steve. I can't remember.
I think there were a couple FBI facilities that actually had, not to that level, but similar incidents.
There were threats about that. All of that is to say that ratcheting up dangerous and false information at that time was really problematic to me. And by the way, that would have resulted in the FBI cracking down, potentially like martial law type scenarios. It would have been bad for the Second Amendment, anybody who wanted it. And it would have played into the power for the left who said, look, these people really are crazy and dangerous. Mm. So I was actually more interested in, let's be sober, let's be sane, let's stick to what the facts are. The facts are the previous 4 years have been bad. We had an Afghanistan withdrawal. We had a COVID vaccine mandate. We removed thousands of service members. Guys like me got kicked out. They were investigating Catholics. I can do this all day without even taking a breath. There are unlimited things to be upset about. And the thing to be upset about is the FBI served a search warrant at the former president's house, which is Banana Republic BS. So to say that all happened, you don't have to add something crazy like the FBI tried to kill Donald Trump when it's false. That seems really dangerous and stupid. So when that happened, Dan and I had a falling out permanently, and he hasn't spoken to me since. And he went on his radio show and said that I'm dead to him. So he can't really make it right with me. He owes me an apology because what he said was stupid, and I think he knows better. Now he's sitting in there, and apparently he's having influencers reach out to me via DMs. In the meantime, he's also saying, like, beware of him because he's an asshole.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
So listen, you can't fix what you did. That's the facts. The only thing that they can do, and I've got a mediation session coming up on August 29th down in Houston, Texas. So I'm going to drive down there. There are 26 current and former FBI employees who are working on a lawsuit that is from them infringing on our religious liberties and constructively terminating me from service. I'm one of the three people that lost their jobs, 26 other people in various capacities. And they said, you know, like, well, Kyle, what are your terms for settlement? My attorney asked me. And I said, the only thing the DOJ can do to get the ire of Kyle Serafin to go away is to offer me something, and I don't know what that thing is, that makes me wake up every single morning, put my feet on the floor, and not figure out that I hate them with the burning fire of 1,000 suns because my children were made homeless, that my pregnant wife was left crying herself to sleep for 6 months, and I had to lose my home and all the safety and all of my future that I had in front of me to go do this thing. And now I do a podcast every day, and I talk to an audience, which I'm really grateful for, but I didn't want any of this. I was perfectly happy to go after bad guys on an Indian reservation you've never heard of in New Mexico. I was thrilled to do that.
Well,
and that wasn't allowed. So here I am doing the thing. They have to figure out how to turn off the rage of 1,000 suns for the rest of my life, because I vowed that I would do this until I'm 85. I will hurt their feelings professionally.
You know, it's funny. And, you know, I'll quickly comment on the O'Keefe and Kelly thing, because I was kind of following all of that. And obviously, I have a friendship with O'Keefe. I know you know that, too. But I remember watching that. I'm saying, okay, I see, obviously, you know, I see where Kyle's coming from here. And then also, you know, I've known James for a while. So it's like, I'm just going to kind of avoid it. And then the Julie Kelly thing, a similar thing, like, pretty sure she used to be a Democrat donor and all this stuff. And I'm just like, you know what? People are going to choose to do their things, whatever. I'm going to continue to report the truth here and really try to be a bridge for everybody. But all of that to say,
the one thing I'll tell you, Owen, that people always get a kick out of with me, like, nobody needs to choose somebody. Like, you can talk to anybody you want, and you can still talk to me, and I don't hold it against them. One of my best friends who actually introduced me to my wife is best friends with my brother, my younger brother, and my younger brother hasn't spoken to me in 8 years. But like, we have a go between. We hang out. He'll have dinner with me.
And
he'll
blood
go
is thicker than water, they say.
It's not in this case. He doesn't want to have anything to do with me, and that's fine. It's like, okay, look, I don't need people to choose one thing or another. Certainly not over like
we have a common vision, and that's really when you talk about, oh, you know, join the team. We do have a common vision, and now it's like, well, what happened to our vision in this administration? And I do want to ask Steve that exact question coming up, but I'll just say this. So people kind of get an understanding. I realized, and I think it was proven again today, when you made that post about the guy that was flying around Cash Patel and now he's going to be out of a job officially tomorrow, that post is what did it. I realized, and this probably started happening mostly after I got out of prison. It was happening a little bit before that, but you know, slowly but surely I've been gaining a bigger following and a bigger profile. And so now what I realized, because it's to the point where it's like, why do I have people reaching out from D.C. asking me to do something for them? Why do I have people in Congress reaching out to me asking me to do something for them? And right. It hit me, and I'm like, my God, I'm like, they really can't do anything. Like, they really are in there, and they feel like they're handicapped and handcuffed. And they're like, hey, Owen, you got to get this story out. Hey, say this name. Hey, make a big deal of this story. Like, we can't do anything about it. We can't. And it hit me at that point. I'm like, wow, you get into D.C. and it's like you really can't get anything done when I'm a member of the media. And I'm like, wait a second, you're in D.C. You work in said this and you're asking me to do this. Like, why can't you do it? They're like, you just got to do this for us. So let me ask, as before we hit the hour break here, let me ask Steve this. Where would you say the FBI is at right now? And if you want to kind of have like a starting point, where is the FBI at right now compared to where it was at in the Biden administration or compared to what you had hoped it might be when Patel and Bongino took over, theoretically?
Well, I believe that the FBI is in a far more dangerous situation for the American people than it was during the Biden administration, because we've seen no institutional changes. We've seen the intelligence collection get ramped up. We've continued to see the terrorism entrapments going, and it's just going against a different class of people here or there. And then there's also the delusion that, well, we got our number one and number two draft choices in there, so we're definitely going to win the Super Bowl. And where they're under the Biden administration, you had Christopher Wray, who was out of favor with roughly half the country already. But now you've got Kash Patel on there, and you've got Dan Bongino, and so many people who were 6-7 months ago talking about how the FBI was a problem and we need to fix it. They said, oh, well, you know, I trust those guys. So it's fine now. And they're just not paying attention. Those guys have gotten in there, but they haven't actually brought about the changes that we need. And that puts us in an incredibly dangerous situation, because there will come a time, I know everybody's high on hopium right now, but there will come a time when you get a President Gavin Newsom, American Psycho, in there or something like that, who's going to install his puppet over at the FBI. And unless you take those teeth out of the attack dog, they're going to go right back to what they were doing under the Biden administration. It's actually going to be far worse, far more ramped up, because they will have known that they got away with it. And then when there was some sort of like pushback from the American people, the corrective action never happened. So I think from where we are right now, we're actually worse off than where it was, just because of the awareness standpoint. And I haven't seen the changes. And that's really the ultimate betrayal to me, because I was as optimistic as just about anybody else seeing those guys go in there. And I continue to root for them to do the right thing, but they just don't seem to either be interested in it or they're confused about what they can do.
Well, that's, and I try to clarify this when it's necessary, but I mean, that's what I'm saying. My job isn't to be a cheerleader. And believe me, there's plenty of people on social media, and they get paid to do it, that they're pom-pom wavers. They're literally cheerleaders on the side. I'm not paid to be a cheerleader. I'm not a cheerleader. I'm not a pom-pom waver. I'm gonna call things as I see them. And other than demoralization, and I'll be patient, and I am still rooting for Patel and Bongino, like you said. I don't know how we can do any better, quite frankly. I mean, maybe you two. I guess I would say you two at the helm maybe might be better
there
at this point.
There actually are better. There's better options out there.
Well, now I would say so. But I sit here and I look at it like what Steve just said, and I'm just like, man, we got the number one and the number two pick in there, and we're still at the same place? You know, it's just like, I don't know. It really makes you wonder, and other things make you wonder, like, man, what goes on when these people go into D.C.? Like, what goes on when you get the positions of leadership in these federal agencies? Because something happens, something changes.
I'm only as strong as you are backing me. Have you figured it out yet? This is not like a regular show. The bad guys don't like it for a reason, because we have the information and we have the spirit of victory. So go now to thealexjonesstore.com. The new sale is one of the biggest in the history, maybe the biggest. Store-wide, buy one, get one free super sale. All the t-shirts, all the ball caps, the widest selection, all of the award-winning supplements, the Shilajit, the Methylene Blue, the Ultimate Life Force Blood Cardiovascular Cleaner, the best out there, Atomic Defense, Total Booster Immune System, the Irish Sea Moss, just over the top, everything, all of it, already discounted, buy one, get one free, but here's the catch. You have to be a subscriber, which is $30 a month, and you instantly get $40 to spend in the store. So if you're going to buy something, you instantly make your money back and then some simply by becoming a subscriber in the profile. Cancel one click anytime. You need to try our Ultra Methylene Blue, but talk to your physician first. If you're on SSRIs and things, you can't take it. So check with your physician, or you can look at what you're taking as well and just check if there's interactions with it, because it's very powerful. It's very strong. Get the capsules or get the pure liquid. Same thing with the capsule. It's the very best medical grade. Get the IRC Moss. Get the Shilajit. Get the pills, the gummies. It's all there. And then there's the best probiotic, the best prebiotic, the best gut cleanse formula, the very best turmeric, ultimate turmeric. It's just amazing. 95% cubanoid. Great fat, natural fat burning formula. It's all there at thealexjonesstore.com. And the widest selection of t-shirts, ball caps, and more. Like it's. I said I want the widest selection. It's kind of insane. There's like 500 plus designs now. It's just, it's redonkulous. So get it all right now and fund the Second American Revolution worldwide at thealexjonesstore.com. We'll be right back.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.